Hello and welcome to Need to Know, your weekly investment podcast brought to you by the experts at Coutts. I'm Ben Allen. I lead the financial sponsors and executives proposition here at the bank. This week I'm in for Sarah Muir, and I'm joined as ever by those of you who are used to the series by Coutts CIO, Alan Higgins. Hello, Alan.
Hey, Ben, how are you doing?
Very good. Are you?
Yeah, not bad. Looking forward to the CPI a little later. But by the time this is up, our listeners would know about it.
Yeah, we'll be just in time for it. Well, it depends which way you look at it, doesn't it? But absolutely. Each week on the podcast, we look at three things you need to know for the week ahead. So, Alan, you mentioned one of them. What are the three things you think we need to know this week?
So CPI, it's all about inflation globally, and the US as a lead. So we'll have a little chat about CPI. Try not to be too micro on this particular piece of information. And the debt ceiling. So Ben, you and I have been through a few of these in terms of debt ceiling, but I'm a little bit worried this time. So we can talk about that. Mm-hmm. And then just, you know, to a little bit different, but also related to debt, because here's a country with very low debt, Ireland. Why are Ireland doing so well? They're about to launch a sovereign wealth fund. Remember the great dream of our oil revenues, launching a sovereign wealth fund? It never happened.
I know Scotland were looking at it for a while, weren't they? And some various good examples around the world, but they are indeed in an enviable position. So what should we start with? US debt. Let's talk about that, shall we?
Yeah, let's talk about that. So we've got a debt ceiling situation.
This always used to petrify me back in the day when I was younger and less experienced. This would be on the news and it would be made out to be the end of the world and the whole global economy was going to come crashing to an abrupt halt.
Probably, Ben, because you and I were working together in 2011 and you weren't that young. I think you took it in your stride, I remember, in 2011. But 2011, if you recall, we had a debt ceiling issue, but also we had a huge Eurozone debt crisis, of which, interestingly, Ireland really featured in 2011. We'll come back to that. Mm-hmm. So, the US stock market fell 17%, but Europe was all over the place, much weaker, anything from 20 to 30%. So, there's bad memories of that. Of course, it got resolved. And Bill Gross has just come up, the famous ex-bond fund manager of PIMCO has come out and said it's all a whole lot of rubbish. They'll agree as they usually do. But, Republicans and Democrats rarely get on, but they really don't seem to get on at the moment.
Yeah, so let's go back to look into the sort of overall background behind this. It's a unique rule, isn't it, in the US fiscal system. What is this US debt ceiling?
So it's a limit based on an amount which gets revised up. It's 31.4 trillion. And apparently we're already there. It's just they're kind of trying to make ways meet by using bits and pieces about, it's like you and I, you know, we need to buy a pint of milk and all our Coutts cash has gone as humble servants at Coutts. So we look down the back of a sofa and try and, you know, find a few pounds. That's what they're doing right now. And so Janet Yellen came on this week and said June 1. It's looking like June 1 when these bits and pieces looking for pounds and dollars down the sofa no longer work.
It's sort of eye-watering amounts of money we're talking about. It's hard to imagine 31.4 trillion in your mind, isn't it? But it's about fundamentally the US government running the risk of not being able to meet its public spending obligations. So it does sound very serious. Why hasn't it been raised then?
Well, usual reason, politics. The Republicans want to see, if not debt reduction, less spending, and the Democrats want business as usual. And we've seen it before. It's kind of a bit of an obsession. I don't know if you ever, I'm sure you've been to Manhattan, but you may recall they've got a national debt clock. They started it in 1989 in Times Square. Being a geek, of course, when I went to Manhattan, I had to go and see that. They've moved it now. But the amazing thing is that the debt then was just 2.7 trillion then. It's now 31.4. So there is a bit of an artificial effect that economies grow, especially over the long run. So this nominal figure is not helpful. But yeah, normally I'd be standing up at internal Coutts meetings and say, it's nothing. and it's been resolved before. And look, it will get resolved, but could we have an accident first? Because basically, the Biden and get it right, I think it's Mitch McConnell, had their first meeting yesterday as we speak. No agreement, but I suppose they're talking, that's something. And look, I think Bill Gross is right. It will get resolved. But, you know, could we have one day of default, or, you know, just to shake the system a bit? I don't know.
So it's a sort of worst case scenario. They start doing the dance, don't they? It's never going to agree at first time. But what will it mean if it isn't raised?
So it gets pretty technical. What it does mean, that any interest payments on that particular day or around that day, any maturities don't get repaid. And therefore, you know, for example, if you're a bank that was relying on a redemption of a bill, that could be tricky. If you're a corporate, and unintended consequences. Now, the Federal Reserve Board will be there to provide unlimited liquidity. Yeah. So it will be a 1 or 2 day thing if it happens. And then you get really technical and geeky. The US will technically default, and credit default swaps, which is a derivative based on default, will trigger, and there'll be all kinds of stuff going on. So Ben, let me put it this way. We'd have to have probably 30 minutes of need to know, and the need to know would be one topic. What the hell's going on with this default? Yeah. But it's going to be messy. You know, even 1 or 2 days, you can see it's going to be messy.
So is that sort of worst case scenario likely? How do you see the whole thing playing out, do you think?
I see, you know, the most likely scenario, as we've always seen, 2011, 2013, a last minute deal. And the Democrats will have to budge here somewhat. And as will the Republicans, of course. And that's most likely. Second most likely is a mistake, which quickly gets rectified as, the average US consumer, business person, you know, is outraged, and the world is, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, it is pretty humiliating for a developed economy like that on the world stage, isn't it? All right, well, let's see how it plays out. It's going to be interesting, potentially a bumpy ride. Should we move on to US CPI?
So US CPI is out shortly. So not no changes expected. Can be market moving. But Ben, what I would just talk about is the trend, because you and I talk to a lot of clients. They're pretty pessimistic about the UK, maybe a little less pessimistic than they used to be. But our inflation performance looks a little bit disappointing on the headline. Yep. But for markets, it's all about the United States. That's what I want to remind listeners. So inflation's fallen from a high of 9.1 to currently 5. So it's expected to be 5, you know, give or take. But I would focus on the bigger picture. Inflation is coming down in the US, and we're pretty convinced it's going to fall further. People will look at the so-called core number, taking out food and energy, and that will be looked at. But I would encourage our listeners to focus on the trend. I'd just like to pivot, because there is a lot of pessimism in the UK about our 10% number. But on a core basis, we're not so far off. So I hate to throw numbers, but just a few. So core in the US is basically 5.5. Where are we in the UK? 6.2. Are we in Germany? 5.9. Just to pick on Spain, lovely place, but 6.6 in Spain. So the point being, for our listeners, yes, there's a lot of reasons to be pessimistic about the UK, as usual. And headline inflation looks much worse than the United States. And that'll be confirmed today. But on a core basis, UK is actually performing broadly in line.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you set out the numbers like that, that's quite different to most people's perception, I think. But we're find out at 1:30, so shortly after we finished talking, I saw that Reuters have done a straw poll of economists, and the consensus is that it will hold steady at a monthly 0.4%. Some forecasters see it increasing. So why would that be the case if it does increase?
So difficult to say month to month. What's been sticky is housing, or the way they do housing. The way they do housing is rental income, because that's the kind of the main cost. They don't put house prices in there. And in a quirky way, just statistically right for the geeks, they do the imputed value. So they take Ben Allen's house, your mansion, and say, right, the rental value of this has gone from £10,000 a month to £11,000 a month, and therefore much, much higher. And that's the number that gets thrown in. But in the real world of what's happening in the US, rents are falling, but it's taking a while to come through. So people will be looking carefully. They call it shelter in the States. So if you happen to be reading about it, people will be looking carefully at the shelter component of CPI. It's 40% of core and a big component of inflation.
You've made me think perhaps I ought to rent my house out. If CPI does increase, what are the likely implications from a market perspective, do you think, Alan?
So look, generally, as you know, Ben, we really like to get clients to focus on the longer term, because longer term you earn the risk premium. But we recognize people listening to this maybe have a shorter term focus. And look, ordinarily, I would say any high number markets would sell off. But we had an employment report on Friday, just by way of example, that was strong. Wages were bad. The market rallied. So sometimes, even, you know, for those short-term traders out there, it can be challenging, and it's not recommended, but each to their own. We like to invest longer term here. But I guess what I'm saying is there's an awful lot of pessimism out there already. I mean, Ben, you talk to a lot of clients. You've probably, out of 10 clients, how many are optimistic? Number out of 10?
Five. Depends which day, doesn't it? I'd say five, actually.
Okay, five
it's
out of 10.
It's all about the context.
That's more than I thought.
Yeah. There are people holding off making longer-term commitments, but as we always agree, it is, of course, time in the markets, not timing. What about interest rates? Do you think this signifies an end to US rate hikes?
So we think so. We think there's real damage coming down the line with respect to regional banks. As a reminder, we've covered this before. There's circa 4,000 banks, and not every bank is JP Morgan, where, Ben, you go up to JP Morgan with your $10 million and say, can I have 5%, please? They're going to say, go away, Mr. Allen. We don't need your $10 million. In contrast, if you go to a small regional bank in Pennsylvania, they'll be all over you for your $10 million. So that is the issue. And regional banks are very important, obviously, local business, commercial real estate. There's a big squeeze coming. And the tactical team here are pretty convinced about that. I agree from a strategic point of view. But this is the difficulty, Ben. Okay. Likely tough times, maybe recession coming in the US, but what does the stock market do?
Yeah.
What wins out? Weaker earnings are lower interest rates. And I think ultimately lower interest rates win out. They always do. The market loves lower interest rates. The tactical team think that's going to come later here at Coutts. Mm-hmm. But to sum up the year, I mean, well, I should say Janet Yellen and Jay Powell think we're still going to have a soft landing. Obviously, if we have a soft landing and inflation falls dramatically, then we're off to the races. But put that to one side. The real challenge is, okay, recession comes, so anticipated. What do the markets do? Quite a challenge for our tactical team here at Coutts.
Yeah, and it's all about this the gap between perception and reality, isn't it, at the end of the day? All right, that's very interesting. Equally as interesting, actually even more interesting, I think, let's talk about this Irish sovereign wealth fund. So it's a concept that's been very successful in other countries around the world. There is, and I didn't realise this until I was looking into it, there's a bumper budget surplus in Ireland at the moment, which is about 3.4% of gross national income this year, and it's forecast to rise to 5.4% next year.
It's unbelievable, isn't it, Ben? There's debt everywhere. We just talked about debt in the States, debt in the UK. With a name like Higgins, obviously I've got a bit of Irish blood in me. Yes. So I'm a quarter Irish, a bit good, but, what the hell are they doing that's so good? So we come back to the Sovereign Wealth Fund, and we should say we're a broad church here in terms of politics. I think I said before I voted for virtually everyone, including even Plaid Cymru, when I was living in Wales. But let's face it, Ireland is a low corporate tax country. Yeah. Corporation tax in Ireland is 12.5%. Mm-hmm. It's going up to 15%, but the revenues are coming in. Many US companies want to have some kind of footprint in Ireland and are paying the taxes there.
It's about some of the tech giants, is it?
Exactly. Tech giants and others, pharmaceuticals. But these are numbers. You know, we talked about 2011 when you were last scared about the debt ceiling.
Yeah.
In 2011, debt to GDP, so total Irish debt to GDP divide, was 120%, much higher than anyone else. Today, it's 45. Mm. So the reason I say that is that Liz Truss and Quasi, going back to them, their Irish plan for lower tax rates on corporation tax, I think they were right. I think they made a fundamental mistake of timing and the personal tax rates. But on corporation tax, I think they're right. Look, we're a broad church, a personal view, but Ireland is evidence that it works, because look at them now, as you say, Ben, budget surpluses, and now the ability to have a sovereign wealth fund. We don't have a sovereign wealth fund. We're still mired in debt.
I can't believe you're talking like this. A few months ago, we were ridiculing that sort of regime and what they were looking for. But so expand a bit more on how does it find itself with this good fortune, and what sort of amounts are we talking about, Alan?
So look, Ireland's a relatively small economy, so the size of the sovereign wealth fund will be small. And yeah, so absolutely, in terms of the timing and in terms of the recklessness, Ben, I back you up in terms of the big splurge, if you like, of Liz Truss and Quasi. But I guess what I'm pointing to, the general direction is Ireland is evidence that low corporate tax rates in particular work. Now, I'll just say something about Irish taxation. What else I like about it is that it's very simple. From a personal tax perspective, there's just two tax rates, 20 and 40. Okay, 40 kicks in a nice socialist way at a low level. So you're paying it pretty quickly, but nice and simple, easy to understand. I certainly don't understand the UK tax system. Do you? You know, national insurance and, you know, I would know all the bands.
And don't get us started on pensions and so on. Oh, we have the experts pensions. Here to help with that, of course.
We do have experts at Coutts, thank God, because, yeah, I mean, I pensions are a complete mystery to me in terms of... So, yes, let's not start with there. But nice and simple, 20 and 40, and a corporation tax is going to be 15. I think there's something to be said for simplicity. And that's how they got there through... They pushed back against the EU and saying, your corporation tax is too low. They said, no, we're sticking with it. And look, they did have some austerity post-2011, 2012, to be fair. So there was a bit of that going on. But it's a big success story. And, you know, as an economist, I do believe incentives work. So I would like to think that the UK government at some stage will look at this and say, okay, we have to raise corporation tax temporarily. Fine. Rishi Sunak, very prudent. But at some stage, can we be one of the lower countries for corporation tax? You and I, Ben, are both pro-business, right? There's nothing more pro-business than that.
100%. Yeah. So slightly bucking the concept behind the EU of harmonisation, I suppose, isn't it? Undercutting the rest of mainland Europe.
They've been doing it for years.
Yeah.
And very successful. They have. Yeah.
All right. Last question on this subject. And then we'll wrap up. How might the funds be used, do you think, for this wealth fund? And will it be sustainable? Because they've got a general election coming up, I think, before 2025, haven't they?
So I think it will. So, if not the biggest, one of the biggest out there, which is well known, is called Norges, the Norwegian one. Right. Their oil revenues. And that's invested in a very sustainable way. A bit like us, they will invest in classic energy companies, if you like, the BPs and Shells. But again, a bit like us, they super engage. So they are there voting alongside us. I say that with humility because Norges is huge compared to us. But voting and engagement is the way to go. I'd be very surprised if this Irish Sovereign Wealth Fund is not run in the same way. And as you say, basically long-term investment, focus on growth investments.
Yeah.
It's been super successful in Norway. You see them all over the world. In the Middle East, they're big. United Arab Emirates has one called ADIA, for example. Yeah. Saudi Arabia has just started one with oil revenues. So I think it will be sustainable investment, absolutely. And yeah, a little bit of a message to the world, Ben. And you know, with respect, it's a broad church, and you know, many systems work, and we're unlikely to go there in the UK. But I just hope all parties look at Ireland and think, you know, maybe this, there is a way, there is an alternative way. Simplicity. So I'll go for simplicity over the rate.
I think that's a good note to end on. Thank you, Alan. That's very interesting. So three things we've covered today. The US debt ceiling negotiations, we think they'll find a way through as they normally do, but we'll be watching it with great interest. The Irish Sovereign Wealth Fund, we obviously wish them well with that. And it's great to see the turnaround in the economy and the good fortune that they find themselves in. And then the US CPI, well, 130, we will know. I'll let you go and prepare for that information. So I'm sure you'll want to be all over it. Thanks, Alan. A reminder that the views expressed in this podcast are not intended to constitute investment advice, and they're accurate at the time of recording, but they are subject to change. Thank you, Alan, for joining me today. Don't forget to check out the podcast page on Coutts.com. You can also subscribe to the podcast via iTunes and Spotify. You can access some previous episodes on there, including our recent cryptocurrency special with CoinShares' James Butterfill and last week's chat with James Hawkes about the Bank of Japan. Sarah will be back later this week with a very exciting special guest. That sounds interesting. Can't wait to find out who it is. Until then, bye for now.